I want to tell you a story. I'm almost certain it's true. Some Salvation Army officers wanted a dog. And back in the day, Salvation Army, being a Salvationist, you'd remember this, some of you, the very strict lifestyle around being a Salvationist, you know. We didn't buy things on Sunday. We didn't work on Sunday. Remember that? Some of you are a fraction older than me. Didn't go to the movies, didn't play cards, all sorts of things. So these Salvation Army officers felt it was very important that they had a Christian dog. So they went to the place where dogs are bought, wherever that is, and they said to the manager, it's very important that we get a Christian dog. And he said, it's fine, I have one. I have a Christian dog. And they said, well, how will we know it's a Christian dog? And he said, I'll show you. So he said to the dog, he said, Psalm 23. The dog ran over, got a Bible, flipped the pages with his paw, opened it to Psalm 23. They said, there's no doubt about this. This is a Christian dog. So they took the dog home. True story. took the dog home. And they had some friends come over to see the new dog, as you know, as that happens when you get a new dog, people come over. And their friends said to them, nice dog. And they said, it's a Christian dog. And they said, how do you know? And they said, well, we'll show you. Psalm 23. Dog ran over, flipped the pages in the Bible, Psalm 23. They said, that's fantastic. A visitor said, does it do normal dog tricks as well? And they said, well, let's find out. And so they said, heel. And the dog immediately jumped up and put both paws on one of their foreheads and started praying. They said, oh no, it's a Pentecostal dog. I don't know what your spiritual gift is, whether it is prophecy or whether it is healing. We've been listening to the words today of one of the great prophets of Israel, Jeremiah. And in the main, prophecy was not really foretelling, as in predicting the future a long way in advance, you know, kind of the way we often understand the book of Revelation. But really, prophecy was forthtelling. So Jeremiah was speaking into the current situation. And this was a very, very difficult time for the kingdom of Israel. Basically, they were trapped between two superpowers in the time of Jeremiah. So the power in the region for a long time had been Egypt. And if you kind of have a vague idea of the geography, you'll know that there's Egypt down on one side of them. A superpower had been for centuries. The rising superpowers was on the other side of them, which was Babylon. And if you wanted to get from Babylon to Egypt, the way you went was via the coast, which was through some of the lands of Israel. And basically, Jerusalem has been caught up, and Israel has been caught up in these battle of the superpowers. And Jeremiah was advising the kings, and he was saying to them, this is what God says. So he's forthtelling, right? He's speaking into this situation. And he says, this is what's going to happen. Here's what you must do. And he's repeatedly ignored by the kings. Eventually, they put him in prison because they wouldn't listen to what he said. And surprisingly, Babylon defeated Egypt. There was a puppet king put in place. This puppet king then still tried to do a deal with Egypt. And then Babylon, the Babylonian army, swept through, destroyed Jerusalem, and carried lots of them off into exile. That's the time that Jeremiah was living in. Catastrophic times, really. And in the middle of addressing all this, he actually says something in this passage which is actually really, really important. In fact, it's like what we might call a pivotal shift in the way that we understand God. Something very, very dramatic just happened in that reading. And if we're going to think through all that it means. I do like verses in the Bible which nobody understands. And this passage actually contains one of them in verse 22. I forget the translation that it actually had in the Bible reading we had today. In verse 22, where it said, the woman will return to the man. Now, in fact, we're not actually sure what that means. You've probably got a footnote down the bottom that says, or will protect the man. Literally, it says, a woman will encompass a man. Or a woman will surround a man. And when I read all the commentators, none of them can agree on what that means. All right? But what it means is, we don't know what it means, but it points to the fact, I'm not going to offer what it means, but it points to the fact that something fundamental has changed. And it's a clue about something has changed in the way of tribe and clan and patriarchy and the way that people came to faith, because the faith one had was the faith of one's fathers, the faith of the clan. That's what you followed, you see. And Jeremiah goes on to talk about that God is going to deal differently with people. So this is a big moment. Now, we know what covenants mean. So a covenant is a promise, a special promise, a significant promise between two parties or between two people. And the covenant we probably know best is the covenant of marriage. So that's a significant promise that people make to each other. And there'd been a covenant relationship between God and the children of Israel, that they were to obey God's law and God would bless them. And this was an if-then covenant. If you obey my law, then I. This is an if-then covenant. All right, it's built around the law. It's built around their obedience. But if you've read the Old Testament at all, you'll know that they failed over and over and over again. They failed to obey God. You know, I still remember reading through the Old Testament as a young man. And I thought, why can't they get it right? They've gotten it wrong so often. Why can't they see the problem? But they couldn't see the problem because they were so invested in the surrounding culture. They couldn't see the problem because they'd adopted all these practices, particularly the fertility cults of the surrounding cultures. And they'd taken them on board and they couldn't actually see what they were doing wrong. And God says to them, you failed to obey me. And so what's going to happen here is that you'll be punished. And that's what Jeremiah's been talking about. And then he offers this hope. He says, you'll be restored. You will come back. But when you come back to me, says God, something's going to be different. You'll be people of a new covenant. The relationship between us will change. You'll be a new people of God, bound not by law, not by your own blood in terms of your ancestry, not by blood ties, but by the knowledge of God in your heart. That's what it says in verse 33. By the knowledge of God in your heart. So it's no longer about the tribe and the clan and the way your family has lived. God says it's about you and me. That's what he says to us. And this new thing, this new covenant began with the saving and the restoring of Israel in Old Testament times. But that was only the warm-up. The new covenant was fully realized in Jesus Christ. And it's been important to the church. Always. And we know that that's how they understood Jesus' ministry. And so Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, when he's talking about the Last Supper, he actually talks explicitly about this as the new covenant. And this is what he says. For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread, and when he'd given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. So Jesus Christ is this fulfillment of this new covenant, this new way of understanding God and his relationship with his people. So we are new covenant people. We are part of this new covenant. And at the centre of our faith is the life and death of Jesus Christ. We love and worship him, the source and object of our faith. And we kind of know that. But how else was it new? What had really shifted here? What had really changed? That this was a countercultural community, this women surrounding men idea that, you know, has baffled scholars for centuries, that somehow Jeremiah says the community is going to look and feel different. It's not going to be like the world. It's not going to be like the surrounding culture. Sharon and I used to attend Hurstville Corps back in the 90s. And like many corps then, we had a holiness meeting in the morning and a salvation meeting at night. And I remember at the salvation meeting, a guy called, we called him Humphrey, had come. And the reason we called him Humphrey was he always wore the same T-shirt and he had a picture of Humphrey B. Bear on it. I'm not sure I ever spoke to Humphrey. But I remember one night that, as in the salvation meeting, they made a call to the mercy seat and they said, you can come down and pray. And this guy came down the front and he put his arms out and he fell face forward onto the ground. And we were kind of a bit of awkward, didn't know what to do, because he should have known that if you come out the front, you're meant to kneel at the mercy seat, right? That's accepted behaviour. And he'd fallen on his face on the front. And then our assistant officers, a good and godly man, Ron Anderson, he came down and you're thinking, what's he going to do? You're going to grab him and tell him to sit up and do it properly. Now Ron got down on his knees, put his face on the carpet next to this man and shared the gospel with him and prayed with him. It's countercultural, you see. It's a new community. Things happen differently. And at the heart of this new community is this idea of individual responsibility. An individual accountability in relationship with God. One of the things that I think shocks us, well, it shocks me in the Old Testament, is this idea of corporate responsibility. Now, I don't know if you remember back to when you were in primary school, but teachers, not good teachers, let me stress, teachers often used to keep the whole class in because the boys at the back were being naughty. Did that ever happen in your class? You know, who did that? No one will say, you're all staying in, all right? The boys, you're all going to stay here. And I hope you boys at the back feel bad because everybody's staying behind. And I never did. Oh, bad teachers do that, right? So the negative consequence really needs to be passed on to the child who's causing the disturbance, not to the whole class. Why would you punish the whole class because of the behaviour of one or two boys? But in fact, in the Old Testament, that's what happens. I don't know if you remember this story from when Joshua conquered Jericho. So that's a famous story, right? So remember Joshua marched around seven times, making all sorts of noises, the walls fall down. They'd been instructed not to take anything. But a guy called Achan did. And a guy called Achan took some gold and some silver and a really nice cloak, and he took it back to his place and hid it in his tent. And in the very next battle, the Israelites lost. And Joshua, the leader, said, why did we lose it? It's because somebody's done the wrong thing. Who is it? And they gradually sorted out that it was Achan. And they said to Achan, have you done the wrong thing? And he says, yes, I did. I saw some gold and some silver and a really nice cloak, and I took it and I hid them in my tent. So Joshua, a man who I otherwise admire, got Achan and his wife and his children and all his animals. They took them up the valley and they stoned them all to death. Now, there's an Old Testament story that I don't understand, all right? I'll ask God to explain it to me one day when I meet him face to face, and we've got time to talk through these things. And I'll have Joshua in the room as well, so he can explain his actions. But in this Old Testament understanding is this corporate responsibility. See, the religion was the religion of the family. The whole family took responsibility. And in the New Covenant, this changes. Did you notice the bit about sour grapes? Do you know what that means? Have your teeth ever been set on edge? Does anybody like jubes? I have to say that word carefully. You know, jubes, you know, like kind of jelly stuff with sugar on? I like jubes. When I was a kid, I loved jubes. Basic lolly, sugar, all you need. And I remember we were on holidays once and I saw this bowl of jubes and I thought, this is great. So I grabbed a handful, a few, and began to eat them. They weren't jubes. Some dastardly person had actually made ginger lollies to look like jubes. Ginger. Oh, it's incredible. My teeth were set on edge. And God says, the one who eats the sour grapes, their teeth are set on edge. It's not that the father eats the sour grapes and the child's teeth are set on edge. All right, you won't be responsible for the sins of your parents. And that's a freeing thing, right? No more corporate responsibility. It's about you and your relationship with me. It's not about your father or your mother and their relationship with me. You don't get a pass. You're not a Christian by virtue of them, but nor are you guilty by virtue of their guilt either. This is part of the new covenant, and it's good that it's fairer. But it means the responsibility is ours. There's no more, she made me do it. No more, I was following him, which was the central problem in their relationship with God, right? They were just following the other cultures. They were following the tribe, following their forefathers in that patriarchal culture. And it's this, really, in this new covenant, there's this paradox of the individual and the community, because a Christian faith is all about a personal faith, right? It's all about my response to God, God speaking into my heart. But at the same time, it has no meaning without us. It has no meaning without community. So it's all about you, but it's all about us as well. That's the radical new thing, the radical new community, the community that's changed its values, that looks different. This new thing of women surrounding men, of individual relationships, of individual responsibility. And we're part of that. We're part of God's new promise. And in that renewed community, things are radically different. And the new community, this new covenant, is generous. It's an open invitation. And membership is standard. It's know and love God. That's it. Know and love God. And when we do, we are part of the new covenant, part of the new community. And the standards for that community are written on our hearts. God himself speaks into our hearts. Now, why does this matter? What does this really mean, this new covenant stuff? I think at the heart of it, it says that you and I belong to God. You and I belong to God. And this belonging thing, it matters a great deal to us as human beings. How do I belong? Where do I belong? How can I be sure that I belong? So lots of you know that I actually fundraise at Parramatta Station most weeks, and there's been a bit of a change because there's lots of building works in Parramatta, and they've closed off Darcy Street and the good exit that I used to stand at where everybody went out. Not everybody goes there anymore, and they've changed platform one anyway. So I used to stand down the bottom of the very steep stairs at that southern or eastern concourse, but to be honest, I was only making half as much money as I used to, and so I thought I better do something about this. And you know, I'm a quick decision maker, so after 12 months, I thought if I go and stand at the top of those stairs, I'll also get the people who are exiting out of platform one. And here's the thing. So a few weeks ago, I tried it for the first time, and I moved from the bakery, which had been very nice, it smelt great there, and I went to the top of the stairs. But I was nervous. Did I belong here? Would I get in trouble? And when the cleaners came close to me, I thought they might be going to say to me, you have to move. You don't belong here. It's belonging is can be an awkward thing. I think of our merge with Granville, and I think of our friends from Granville and that first Sunday that they came to Parramatta. And this belonging is an awkward thing, isn't it? Where will I sit? Who will sit with me? Will anybody speak to me? Do I belong here? What's my place? Where do I fit in? And then, of course, a few months later, we came back to Granville, but we'd moved all the seats. And so all these people who knew where they belonged and where they sat. Belonging matters to us. It does. It does. We need to know. We need to feel that we belong, that we have relationships, that we matter to people, that here's my place. Here's where I can sit and I can be comfortable and I will be known. That's what the new covenant is about. God says to us, you belong. You belong. You belong to me. Not through anything else that's been done. Not because of your parents. Not because of decisions they made. You belong to me. I know you and you know me. You're part of my new community. I really think that the Christian journey is one of belonging more and more to God. Of growing deeper and deeper into God's love for us. Feeling more and more his child. And in fact, I suspect that helping others to feel that they belong is the central Christian task. You see, we are God's people because we know him in our hearts. He lives in our hearts. You and I are a restored person in a restored community, people of a new covenant. And here's the thing, theology may be hard. Studying the Old Testament may be hard. But the Christian faith is quite simple. It's basically like grammar. You know why they stopped teaching grammar? Because they realised you didn't have to know it to speak English really, really well. And I'm sorry for the teachers in the room, but it's true. See, I can say to you, the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. And I can ask you which is the subject and which is the object and what tense it's in. Is it an active voice or passive voice? And most of you won't know. It doesn't matter. All right? You understand the sentence. That's what this relationship with God is like. It's like grammar. You don't have to know it. You can just do it. This sentence, into my heart, into my heart. Come into my heart, Lord Jesus. Come in today, come in to stay, come into my heart. That's the sentence of the new covenant. And if those words resonate with you, if just then, as I said them, they reminded you of your experience, you're a child of God's new covenant and you belong. You individually have become part of the community of God's people. And even though we can't explain it all, we don't know how it works, we don't know all the theological terms, we know that God is our God. We know that we are his child. Why are we here together? Because you know God and I know God. Because Jesus is in my heart and he's in your heart. It's about you and it's about us. God's new covenant is for me and us, and each of us belongs to him. Amen.